Watch your eyes.
This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus.
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores. It's 3-0 United States.
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
And Beam's a little under the weather today, but he's soldiering through on both a day off and a sick day. You've combined the two of them and yet still decided to do some work. So.
Hey, man, it's a World Cup. You got to push through it, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, speaking of the World Cup, the final is coming up. We're going to talk all about that. We'll talk about the games that created that finals matchup, which I think is one of the best matchups you could ask for in this World Cup.
We'll no doubt.
Get to all that. Also talk about Gio Reyna, Greg Berhalter, the controversy from last week. We didn't really get to talk about it, so we're going to throw that in the mix too. We will also let you know this is going to be the final podcast until 2023 for the show. Beam is off all next week. I am off the week after that. And yes, that means we won't have a World Cup final recap, but I think everybody knows the stakes here and we all kind of know what will happen, or we have our opinions of what will happen. But, you know, when we come back from the new year, we can always talk about that when we catch up. But, yeah, hopefully you enjoyed the content that we did this year, and hopefully you enjoyed all the podcasts that we posted during the World Cup.
I know I've enjoyed it. I've had fun doing it this year.
Yeah, it's been a really good year and a really just great to see the show growing. A lot of people have checked this out for the first time, and so it's been really great to see all of you. And we had some watch parties. We've had, you know, the audience seems to be enjoying getting together. So maybe next year we can do more get-togethers. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I say we come over to your house every weekend.
That's great. But we've got five levels. That's
hey, I'm not even gonna say it, but you know what I'm thinking.
Must be nice. And like one level is just a bedroom. There's like a little landing bedroom and then stairs.
Oh, perfect.
Continue.
We have a slumber party.
Yeah. At my own personal level, I guess is what I'm saying. Bizarre. All right. So let's get into the World Cup. We can start just in chronological order here. Argentina took on Croatia in a game that I thought was going to be a little bit more in doubt. I thought it was going to be a little bit better of a contest. I had a little bit more faith in Croatia to be able to do something against this Argentina side. But right now, Argentina is, they're starting to look a little bit like a team of destiny. Are they not?
No doubt.
Like, you've got everything on the line with Lionel Messi. Probably his final World Cup. If he plays again, it'll be...
He did. He said it was his...
Oh, did he say it? Okay.
Yes. So after the game the other day, when they beat Croatia, was it 3-0, I believe?
3-0, yeah.
So when they were doing interviews afterwards, and they were asking him, like, what does it mean to play in a World Cup final, and you know, yet again, and all those different things. And Lionel Messi did come out and say, he goes, yeah, it's going to be pretty awesome for my last game. He goes, it's just hard for me to imagine 4 years down the road, me to be as in good a shape as I am now. So he was basically like 99% in that this is his final match. And I don't think that's a surprise to anybody if you follow soccer at all. You kind of comprehended this and understood that this was going to be his last go round. And what do you know? Here they are in the final.
Yeah. I wonder too with him, I mean, because age-wise, it wouldn't be impossible for him to come back and play at 38 or 39, whatever he would be. I think he'd be just turning 39 at the next World Cup. Wouldn't be impossible that he could still be on the team in some capacity.
Pepe playing at 40.
Right, yeah. Pepe scored a goal. So, I mean, like, it's not impossible. But I wonder, too, if maybe this is something where he realizes when he goes out 4 years from now or 3.5 years from now, he's not going to be the same guy as he is now. And also, I wonder if maybe he's looking at that saying, maybe a little bit of extra motivation for everybody here, because you can clearly see how this team looks up to him. Like, no doubt. Think that's been one of the more endearing things to watch with this Argentina team is that, I mean, Julian Alvarez, I don't know why I said Julian Fernandez. Julian Alvarez, like, not at all, he's a star in his own right. I mean, he's a huge star, huge talent, great player. But you can even see with him where, like, he is looking to Messi whenever he scores to, like, find him. And, you know, obviously one of those goals he scored was because Messi made the run of his life or one of the greatest runs we've ever seen in a World Cup and finished off a beautiful cross from Messi. But you can just see how the whole team is kind of doing that, where they're like, whenever they score, they look for him. Or if he scores, they can't wait to go greet him. I know that's for every soccer player. Once they score, it's a festive time. But it just seems like there's a little something extra around trying to do this with Lionel Messi and for Lionel Messi in some ways.
Yeah, and you have to think as well. I mean, this is a team that, what was it, 8 years ago were so close, right? I mean, against Germany. And then Mario Götze comes on and he scores, I believe, the 117th minute. Like, they have been here before. And, I mean, this is, it's Argentina that we're talking about, for God's sake. I know we're going to get into Morocco here coming up a little bit later on. Like, they already have the expectations and the burden of an entire nation every time they strap up their cleats to go out and play in a World Cup. But you're also talking about that expectation, Bone, now married with the closing cap, I guess, of one of, if not the greatest player to ever walk planet Earth. And so if there were any extra added motivation about this team saying, oh, there's going to be a next time. Like, we've always had this safety net, Lionel Messi, right? Like, and this guy has brought us through so much. Now I feel like the Argentine players, you're kind of realizing that, like, this is going to be the last time that he's going to give it a go at a World Cup. And like you said, I mean, maybe 3.5 years he could. He's not going to be the same player, though, as he has been in this tournament. But I feel like Messi's game has elevated to a new level too. And I mean, that has to be inspiring as hell if you're an Argentina teammate of his, right? It's like, this guy has played in what, 5 World Cups, 4 World Cups, however many it is, whatever the number is, absolutely ridiculous. He's played in the most matches out of any man in a World Cup history. I think it's 27 matches or something astonishing. And so when he turns it up that next bit and that next notch, like, yeah, if I'm a player on the Argentina squad, I have no choice in the matter. I have to tune my game up to the next level too, because look at what the greatest player of all time is doing, and now I'm going to be sitting here and kind of like just loafing on the back line if I'm a defender, or not sprinting my heart out to try and track down a 50-50 ball. Like, no way. So you have that added motivation of him being in his last World Cup, the pressure that it comes with just being an Argentina national player during a World Cup, and then now you finally made it to the final. You are right on the door, especially after losing that opening game to Saudi Arabia. Like, it was so close to being gone for them in the group stage, and I felt like that was probably the best cup of coffee, the best espresso shot, the best wake-up call that this team could have gotten.
Yeah, the best sip of mate. I know the mate saw it started that they had brought, like, thousands of pounds of mate or something like that was shipped over for the team, because everybody in Argentina, if you're not familiar, like, that's a, instead of getting up for your cup of coffee, a lot of people get up and have some of the mate. That's like their, it's a communal drink. It's something that I've always actually wanted to try it, the, like, traditional way. I've had like yerba mate, the little drink you can get in a can, but I've never actually tried
with the straw and the glass. I'm sure I'm just butchering mate.
There's like a, it's like a gourd almost, but it's like a weird looking cup that is, I think the traditional actual thing is made out of some kind of hollowed out gourd. Anyway, yes, if you are from Argentina or you're more familiar with this, our apologies for getting this all mostly wrong, but
yes.
Yeah. Anyway, like, I'm just saying, like, this, it's cool to see Argentina, especially after that opening game where I, like you, thought, uh-oh, this is it going to be a disappointment with Ronaldo and Messi? Like, are they both going to just kind of peter out at the end of this and neither of them have that big World Cup moment at the end of their career? You know, a lot of people were hoping to see Messi and Ronaldo in a World Cup. In a World Cup final. I wasn't, but if that happened, it would have been a big TV number, of course. It would have been a big thing.
It's going to be a big TV number regardless.
Well, I will get to that, because I definitely think the matchup lends itself to that. But just, you know, one more thought on Messi. He is now the all-time leading goal scorer at World Cup finals for Argentina. And, I mean, that's like being the leading home run hitter for the New York Yankees.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, just so many great players have played there. So many tremendous goal scorers. Like, you've got more goals for Argentina at the World Cup than Maradona does. Like, it's just...
It's a pretty good guy to have your name next to.
It's amazing.
And then above now.
And above. I mean, but there are so many great players that have played for that country. And I don't know if you caught the broadcaster, the reporter that was talking to him after the game.
I did, yeah.
And I think she's a reporter in Argentina. Like, I think she's from Argentina and reports for a channel there. And she was saying to him, and I'm going to paraphrase, but more or less saying, you inspired this nation. Like, even if you don't win this World Cup, which I'm sure he didn't want to hear, but she was like, even if this does not happen on this last game, just know that what you've done, every boy in the country, every kid in the country has your jersey. you know, like, this country is behind you. We love you. We appreciate all that you've done. And you can see he was touched by it, but he was also like, let's not have the old, hey, that's all right, you didn't get it done speech quite yet. But right. you could just tell, like, that's a reporter. You don't typically see reporters just breaking down and saying, we thank you for everything you've done. Like, it was a minute-long speech that she kind of gave him, telling him how great he was. That's the power of this dude. That's how, you know, tremendous it is. So Sunday, when we get a chance to watch the final, I mean, you know, for lack of a better term, drink it in. Like, enjoy this.
That's going to be the last time you see it. I mean, last time you see it.
At this level that you're going to see Lionel Messi playing. Now, we will probably get to see him playing in a U.S. Open Cup match for Inter Miami, maybe against, like, FC Detroit or something like that. Because that's apparently what's going to happen at some point. He's going to come to Miami. I don't know if that's still the plan, but in either case, it's been a great display by him. And it's not just him, right? Argentina, they have a tremendous team all across the
board. Boy, are they full of a bunch of shithousery, too. Argentina. I mean, good God. That game against the Netherlands,
man. Were they firing the ball into the bench and just getting into it, trying to fight everybody? I mean, yeah.
I kind of like that, though. Kind of like it from them.
You know what it is? Honestly, embrace being the villain. You know? Like, I forget their goaltender's name, but he had, you know, a bunch of great stops, right, in that Netherlands game, especially in the penalty shootout, but where he kind of said, like, well, I guess no one believed in us, and we're just going to have to prove everybody wrong. And it's like, you're Argentina, man.
Yeah, you can't say that.
No, but that's where they're at. They're like, we're the underdogs. Everyone hates us. We're got to prove everybody wrong. And it's like, you're actually one of the favorites, and most people adore you. Like, not most, but a lot of people adore you. But I'm sure they hear from the haters, and they're focusing on that. Michael Jordan used to focus in on the one guy who doubted him as opposed to the 100 reporters who were like, right. You're awesome. And that's where their motivation is. Now, Argentina, like, after they win on penalty kicks, do you see the photo where they're running
off the line?
Yeah. And looking at the Netherlands, or the, that was the Netherlands game, right, where they look at the Netherlands players, and they're, like, doing little, like, you know, just, like,
faces
little kids'
at
faces, yeah. like, cry some more, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was like, man, they are just, they're embracing that. They are embracing, nobody likes us. We're going to rub it in when we beat you. Obviously, they didn't really do the same thing against Croatia because that one didn't feel the same. I mean, but, and to speak of Croatia very quickly, I mean, that's, you know, it's Luka Modric's final World Cup as well. He's a tremendous player. I made the joke on Twitter that before that game, I said, we're going to get to watch one of the world's greatest players of all time and Lionel Messi. Yeah. And I don't think that was well received. Whatever. The point being, it's sad to see him go out. You know, and
he does have one more match.
Oh, that's right. We can watch him on Saturday play in the third place game against Morocco, who, of course, as you've probably surmised if you haven't paid attention, Morocco lost to France in that game, and France is on to the World Cup as well. The World Cup final, I should say. Didier Deschamps, man. Like, this guy continues to get the most out of this team. Beamer, I have to come clean on all that. I said before this tournament, you were much higher on France. And I was selling them short, saying, look at all the injuries. Look at the guys who aren't going to be there.
Yeah, and but you, look at the guys who are.
Right. You kept pointing me back to, did you see who they still have?
They have this guy named Kylian Mbappe, which, again, playing for France is like the most volatile weapon on planet Earth.
Yes.
I mean, he is nuts.
Incredible, man. He is truly and honestly, I saw somebody tweet out that he has SEC speed. I thought that was kind of funny. It's like, now he has world talent level speed. Like, put him in any race with anybody, and man, something to watch, the way that he can pick his way through space and do it at such a pace.
Here's where I'm at on France. So I thought Morocco played a really good game. And unfortunately for them, they just gave up a goal in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I thought if France got a goal in the first 5-10 minutes, it would look a lot like Argentina's game against Croatia, where it was just counterattack, counterattack, counterattack. We could get 3-4-5-0. And I give Morocco a lot of credit because they had their opportunities. And unfortunately for them, they just couldn't do it. So you have back-to-back games now for France against England. I think they were the poorer team. I think England had every right to go through to the next round with the way that they played that game. And unfortunately for them, of course, Harry Kane misses that penalty. We'll never know what would have happened in extra time. I thought Morocco were the better team in that game yesterday. The terrifying thing about France is that they played poorly against England and they played poorly against Morocco in a World Cup quarterfinal and a World Cup semifinal, and they are still in the tournament.
Yeah,
like that to me is the most terrifying thing about them. It's like they can look at that and say, oh, okay, well, we didn't play great. Yeah, man, you still have an opportunity to hoist the cup. Like, they haven't had their best day yet, Bone. And that to me is quite the conundrum if you're Argentina.
Yeah. They are truly a tough one to figure out as far as when you're lining up against them. I mean, yesterday or in this game, yeah, I guess it was yesterday, you had a situation where, like you said, I thought Morocco had the better of the play. Jawad El Yameek, that bicycle kick, overhead kick that he dropped on there that just missed at the end of the first half, that would have brought that game even. And it was a great kick. It was a great play. It just was inches wrong. And if the inches are right on that one, then it's tied up at halftime. And who knows? That Morocco team, nothing to sniff at. And how tough they were this entire tournament was just so damn impressive to watch.
They deserve a round of applause from the entire world.
They really do, man. And I think it's fitting that they get another match for us to watch them. Like, I'm looking forward to watching them. And I know that it wouldn't feel this way for most teams, right? Like, I bet Croatia's not looking at a third place match and going, yay, this is fun. Right. You know, like, I'm sure that, you know, for a lot of teams, we wouldn't feel that way. You know, France or Belgium would love to be in a third place match, I guess, technically. But you know what I mean? Like, they all had hopes of winning the World Cup. But for Morocco, I feel like the fact that I think their coach kind of got thrown into the mix in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Like they had the whole thing with Ziyech where he wasn't, you know, kind of a part of the team and they had to integrate him back
into
the situation. They
lost in a friendly to the U.S. 3-0.
Yeah, right.
Fired their coach. New coach comes in.
Yeah.
And what does he do? Takes them to a World Cup semifinal.
So I guess does the U.S. get credit for – Greg Berhalter should get credit for Morocco's run. Because he beat that so bad that then they were like, we have to fire our coach. We cannot believe you lost 3-0 to Greg Berhalter. Anyway, more on that coming up. But, yeah, so Morocco, I don't want to gloss over their story at all. They were truly an impressive side, and all kudos go to them. I'm looking forward to watching the third place game. I feel like, honestly, I don't know how you felt about this. I was thinking about it. If the U.S. ever got to this round to the semifinals and then lost, I still feel like that third place game would be super important. Like, I would feel super, that is a tremendous accomplishment.
Absolutely.
For a team like the U.S. that's never been to that level. And for Morocco, I feel like that's clearly the same type of thing, but even more so because they represent, you know, a bunch of different Muslim countries all looking and saying, hey, a Muslim country's finally done something like this in a World Cup.
Africa has finally done.
Right. Like, they've got so many different groups of people that can look and say, well, you know, obviously, when it comes to, I'm sure, like, Egypt isn't thrilled that Morocco's having all this success.
Sure.
Egypt wishes they had made the World Cup. But I'm sure there are fans in Egypt who look at Morocco and go, well, you know what, though? No one's ever gotten this far. It is cool to see them do it.
We
you know
can do
mean?
That.
Yeah, right. We could do that. Right, exactly. And there's probably some frustration there of, like, we should be doing that. But in either case, I think they represent so much more than even what the U.S. would if the U.S. got to that third place game or something like that. It would be tremendous for everyone in the United States, but outside of that, I don't think a lot of people would be like, oh, yay, the U.S.
Go USA.
Right, around the world, Morocco.
A feel-good story. Right.
Morocco's actually a feel-good story around the world. I think a lot of people can look at them and say just what a tremendous run they had.
Also, going back to the goal yesterday,
the
Kylian Mbappe dribble, shoot wide goal. I don't know how you stop that.
I don't either, man. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I'm sitting there
watching it, Bone, and again, I wasn't feeling the best, and I'm like laid up on my couch with like a blanket, and I still, like, you can obviously tell my voice isn't the best. I still like yelled,
of course, like, oh my God.
Right. I don't know. I mean, it had been Morocco just pounding France, and then Mbappe gets the ball in the box, inside, outside, shoot wide, player there, like just clinical. I'm like, I don't know how you honestly stop that.
No. I don't either, man. And Bono, their goaltender for Morocco, we've talked about how great he was. I mean, he made some big stops in that game that could have made this. I mean, it could have even been worse than this in the game. But that still doesn't tell the story of how good Morocco played.
Right.
It's just that France has that ability to turn it on in a 5 minute period and just overwhelm you for 5 minutes. And a lot of times when they get to that point, they're going to get a goal out of it.
They have a ability to flip it on literally in 15 seconds and just
out
of nowhere.
Well, and like Giroud was everywhere, right? He had multiple opportunities, multiple great point blank chances. And like, you know, he's going to get one of those, you feel like, in this game against Argentina. Like, he's going to have opportunities. Griezmann was just a nightmare yesterday.
He has been awesome this tournament.
Dude, he is the, and he's not playing a deep-lying midfielder role, but like, he's playing a little bit like that, where stuff comes up the middle of the field and he just snuffs it out, turns it upfield, and gets it going. Even though like that's not really what I expect out of him. He's just been phenomenal of like being able to win the ball back and get it into a dangerous area or keep it in a dangerous area after it seems to get snuffed out. Like, yeah, he's been everywhere. This is not to say France played poorly. They just didn't play as well as Morocco, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, saying they didn't play as well as England. England's really effing good. Like, that's it's not saying that they are playing badly. They've just gone up against some really tough teams, and they have that extra little something. They have the ability to get those finishes. And that's largely because you have a guy like Kylian Mbappe who puts everyone on skates, everyone on ice, everyone's watching him, and other guys can then pounce on rebounds or be a little more open, a half a step more open than they otherwise would be. Because you have to account for Mbappe. That's just the difference that he makes, and he is tremendous. So, all right, what do you think for this one?
I think it's going to be tremendous. I think as a neutral, this is probably the best matchup that you could ever dream of. So in our little prediction of the entire World Cup, I had Brazil winning against France, and I had Brazil knocking Argentina out in the semifinal. Now, Argentina there, Brazil obviously not, with the way that they crashed out on penalty kicks against Croatia. I'm going to stick with my finalist team, and I'm going back-to-back. I think France get it done, and I think it is very sad Argentina on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, that would be quite the thing. France, if they do that, would be the first team in 60 years to be back-to-back champions. The other last time that occurred, that was Brazil. In the two World Cups prior to the 66 World Cup, which is when England last won it. So think about how long it's been since England won, and that's been longer than that someone has defended their World Cup with another win. So, yeah, France doing that would be quite historic. I think I'm going to say the undeniability of Lionel Messi.
It's too much for France?
I don't want to say it's inevitable. I just feel like
the stars have aligned.
The stars have aligned, and like you brought up with Argentina, man, they are just such punks.
Yeah.
Like, I can see them getting under France's skin. Not that I don't think it's going to, again, I don't think this is going to end up like your favorite team, Atletico Madrid. I don't think it's a Diego Simeone type of performance of coaching from Argentina, but I think it is something where they are going to take every foul as if they've been murdered. They are going to give every little bit of extra something behind the scenes when the ref isn't looking. They're going to try to chip and get away with stuff. And that team that does that so well has one of the best goal scorers in the tournament in Alvarez, has Lionel freaking Messi, one of the best scorers in the history of the world, and has a goalkeeper who kind of reminds me of like a John Bush type, a very rich man's John Bush who used to play for the Crew, who's like not the biggest dude out there, but man, he plays with some heart and he makes some brilliant stops, gets in your face, doesn't take any crap, keeps his defense organized in front of him. I mean, and we talked about Argentina's defense has just been like, they're not bad. They are very good in their own right. So I'm going to go with Argentina to get it done. I think it's going to be a 2-1 game. And I mean, I'll just go ahead and put the storybook capper on it. Messi gets it in like the 80th minute or something.
Oh,
and
my God.
You know what I mean? Like, just, I'll tell you what, this matchup already to me, I think, is going to be the biggest TV number soccer's ever had in the United States.
I agree with that. I hope it doesn't go to penalty kicks. Like,
I agree.
Whenever we get to a final, there are some where, like, because remember a couple of years, or just last summer, like England, Italy, I think we both said, like, I could see this going to penalty kicks, and that would be fine. Like, I hope a World Cup final is never decided by penalties.
I agree.
Now, these two teams, I could see them getting to the 90th, having to play 120, but I'm just hoping that we have a winner, either in regulation or in extra time, that we have to avoid a penalty kick shootout, because I don't think that would be fair to either one of these teams.
No, and it wouldn't be fair to everybody who's watched all these games, quite honestly. And I know that's not what these teams should care about. They should care
about
how
to... Do it for me. Avoid a penalty shootout for me.
Right. I think the fact that you just, on every good World Cup team, on every World Cup finalist team, you typically have these guys. You have game breakers. You have people who can change what happens by just a couple of touches. But I feel like the fact that France and Argentina are both just so dangerous, I don't think it goes to penalties. I honestly think the goals are
in this
game. I can
also see it being 45 minutes of just super caginess.
Yeah.
Like the first 45?
I think the first 45 could be a little bit of feeling out some really good attempts, some really good runs, and then everybody kind of goes, whoa, all right, let's not get too crazy here. And then everything kind of calms back down. These are going to be expert teams at feeling each other out. And right. It's like two heavyweight prize fighters just kind of going to, the first couple rounds, like they're going to be, they're just going to be tapping at each other a little bit, couple big swings, and then get back in and just don't give up too much. That second 45, I think, is where you see two or three goals happen. And it I think, can be truly electric that second half. So hopefully everybody enjoys it. Hopefully it's enjoyable. I mean, hopefully we all get what we're looking for out of this. I can't wait to watch it. We'll take a break when we come back. We will talk about the controversy surrounding one of the United States' brightest soccer stars and its current head coach. That's all coming up next. You're listening to Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaptic Italian Village.
It defies description.
Now back to Bone and Beam United.
Welcome back. So let's talk about this controversy that kind of brewed up over the last week. We didn't talk much about it because I think this all happened like the last time we recorded a podcast, we posted it. And I think like that afternoon or that day was when all this stuff kind of started coming out. So go figure. I don't know how many times you think this has happened, Beamer. I feel like it's every podcast we record something. And then as we're in the process of posting it, something gigantic happens or something where it's like, that would have been great to talk about. And then it's already like, we have to wait till the next time we record. So
yeah, for sure. Also, by the way, Greg Berhalter will just be fired as soon as we try to post this episode.
We're going
to
talk about this.
Or he signs to a
7-year contract or something. Correct. And either way or whatever, or option three, he takes a job somewhere out of it and goes to some other, takes himself out of the running. I don't know. So the controversy during the World Cup was obviously Gio Reyna not playing much in the World Cup. And
we didn't talk about that at all.
No, didn't come up. Nobody complained about it. Twitter was definitely not big mad about that at all. So in the first game, that was in the Wales game, Greg said, well, we were a little concerned about an injury, so we wanted to be careful with him. Gio in the mixed zone said, that's not it. I don't have any issues. I'm fine. I'm healthy. That's what the coach wanted to do. So then you go through the next couple games thinking, all right, Gio's going to play. And in the third game, he finally does the fourth game against the Netherlands. He finally gets some playing time after they're already down 2-0. And it kind of, I don't know if it would have helped much, but he got out there, didn't quite look at his best. Stories came out that this is from Berhalter talking at, oddly enough, like, so what did they get bounced on, a Saturday? Right. That was the Netherlands game. It was a Saturday. Yeah.
Yep.
Monday or Tuesday after that happened, Greg was speaking at some like leadership conference that I guess was supposed to be a closed door type of thing. I was looking up this leader. I couldn't really tell what this thing is, this organization, but they say they're about like understanding leadership and trying to like build leaders and whatever. So
leaders
he's
and legends.
Okay. Yeah, exactly right. Like the old Big Ten. Mm-hmm. So he's talking to this group and he was asked about, how do you lead when dealing with performance issues? Like basically saying, hey, when guys aren't getting it done, what do you do? What's your strategy? And then he took that opportunity to then say, well, we had a player in this past World Cup who we almost had to send him home, blah, blah, blah. And it was so bad. We had a vote and we almost sent this guy home. It was so terrible. And so that story gets out there and everyone knows he's talking about Gio Reyna. So when I saw that, I thought, that's not great for Gio Reyna, right? That doesn't sound great for him. If he's given the coach attitude and not performing, then you kind of get a little bit more of the story. It appears that before they played a game, he was told, because Berhalter actually said in this thing, he said, we had a friendly and he just wasn't getting it done, acted like he didn't want to be there. So we had to decide, all right, you're not going to play we're not going to start you in this game. And he had to adjust to that. And he eventually apologized to the team. Then you find out it wasn't actually quite like Greg said it was in this closed door press conference or this speech he gave, where he assumed everything was off the record and no one was ever going to publish this.
Okay. First of all, was that stated? Was that stated to the people who were there listening and watching?
I don't think it was. I mean, again, you're speaking at a conference of some kind to some group of people.
Like, you're the head coach of an international team that was just playing in a World Cup.
Right.
I would have to assume when you go into a public speaking engagement that nothing is off the record.
Control what you can control is a thing that every coach would tell you. How you then think, oh, I'm going to just spill the beans on our team and talk about something from the locker room. And then, of course, I'm not going to say the player's name, but everyone knows who you're talking about. It's so short-sighted and stupid on his part, quite honestly. It's naive. It honestly is ridiculously naive. So then that all happens. The reporting comes out that, no, actually, he was told prior, Gio Reyna was, prior to this friendly that they played, he was told by Greg, yeah, we don't have a big role for you in this World Cup. And Gio was heartbroken by that. Can't blame him. Right?
He's
19 years old. He's a big star. Everybody's been talking about how he's like one of the, he might be the best player on the team. A lot of people have brought up that Gio Reyna may just be the best player on this team. And so then Greg saying, yeah, we don't have much of a role for you. We don't see a big role for you. That led him to not react great and sulked around for a couple days, kind of dogged it in a friendly that they played, a scrimmage, whatever. It's not the right way to react, but I still put a lot of this on Greg. You know, like, isn't it your job to get buy-in from everyone on the team on the role that they have, right?
If you don't get buy-in, isn't it also your job? Like, the kid is not Cristiano Ronaldo. Like,
no.
he's not 37 years old. He's not going into
his
last
future,
World
he's
Cup.
He's a future member of your team that you're going to need if you're going to be the coach of this team in 3.5 years. You're going to need him again. You can't lose him at 19 years old and have this soured relationship forever. That can't happen.
That's what I'm saying. And so you would have to understand, at least for me, the way that I look at this, Bone, is that someone had to be the bigger person in the room. And again, I'm not totally throwing innocence on Gio Reyna, because I think it always takes two to tango, right?
Absolutely.
But you have to realize that Greg Berhalter has been a manager and is now a manager at the highest level on world soccer, in world soccer, on this stage, in a World Cup, and he is 19 years old. You have to go to him like, Gio, listen, we need more out of you, man. We cannot do whatever we need to do or want to accomplish in this tournament or moving forward if you are not fully bought in. That is your job as a coach.
Yeah.
It is not the Portuguese coach's job to babysit Cristiano Ronaldo after playing in five World Cups. That's not his job. His job is to get the best out of his team, and his job was to bench Cristiano Ronaldo because he felt like he had a better player, but it feels like it's totally the opposite. I'm going to drag a 19-year-old kid and not play him because I say so. That's at least the way that I read it.
I totally agree with you. And then on top of it, I guess when I say this is on Greg as well, is you come to Gio Reyna and you say, look, man, I feel like starting right now because of, you know, you've been injured all year and you know, you've been in and out of fitness and all that. I want to have you be like, instead of saying I have a limited role for you, I don't see a big role for you. Why wouldn't you say to him, I see you as one of our best subs coming off the bench and I'm going to deploy you 60 to 70th minute. And here's the exact specific thing I see for you. Number one, tactically.
Or man, work your tail off in practice and prove to me why you can start
for this team.
Or
say, yeah, it's just a one-game thing. Show me something in these next couple days as we're doing this, and I could definitely, I want this competition. Like, all these managers, all they talk about is we want competition in the lineup. We don't want anyone to feel like their spot is guaranteed. Then you go up to one of your best stars and say, spot is guaranteed not to happen.
Right.
Like, what?
Yeah,
What? I don't understand how anyone's done more on this team that they could say Gio Reyna is guaranteed not to play. Like, there's something there that we're not understanding.
Yeah.
Now, the next level of this that got really stupid is a guy that I loathe, Jason McIntyre. Jason McIntyre, and it's still, I see people posting this left and right, and it is completely wrong. Jason McIntyre, he started the Big Lead, that website, has been in sports media for a long time as a blogger and as like a content aggregator. Like, you just post other people's stories, right? He got on Colin Cowherd's show. So he's on The Herd now as like a regular host with Colin. And he's on that show, I think, every week. He is now given a bigger platform. So he got on the Herd and said, I was told the vote was 13-12 by the players to send Gio Reyna home. And so everyone was like, oh my God, half the team is against him. This guy sucks. And the narrative gets out there that like Gio Reyna almost got voted off the island, which
Survivor style.
And apparently all the people who defend Greg and saw that and were like, hey man, 13 to 12, what are you supposed to do? Apparently missed the idea that it's really, really dumb that a coach left a decision on whether any of the players would be involved in the World Cup or going home to the other players. What are we talking about? You're a manager. That's your job, is to say he's not acting the way I think he should. I will deal with that. And let instead of now putting on the team like, guys, what do you think? Do we want to keep him? It's like they're
think Eric Ten Hag like pulled the locker room when Ronaldo stormed out against Tottenham.
No, I would hope not. I would think that guy has enough sense to say, I know what's best for this team and I'm doing it. Now, I would wholly disagree with him if he thought sending a 19-year-old home was a great idea. But apparently then it comes out from Taylor Twellman. That's not the case.
Real.
Taylor Twellman talked to multiple agents of these players and said there was no player vote. If anything,
Taylor Twellman probably texted a player and said, hey, man, did this happen? No.
Taylor Twellman probably texted Gio Reyna and said, hey, man, did this happen? Like, I'm sure he's got a relationship with all these dudes. He's Taylor Twellman. He has a big standing in U.S. soccer and certainly has a place where he could be in contact with any of these dudes. But yeah, he reached out to these guys and basically found out not true. There was no player vote. And then on top of it, it sounds like it was more of the coaches and the strength and conditioning staff voting on whether or not to send him home.
Jesus.
Also, like, why, Greg, are you letting the guy who's in charge of how much Wheaties and whey protein they eat decide whether or not one of your best players is in the World Cup or not? Like, it's beyond absurd that people aren't looking at Greg Berhalter in this and saying he completely screwed this up. And
hey,
then,
hold on.
Yo, go ahead.
Does it make you feel better that after Spain got bounced by Morocco, that Luis Enrique said, I wish I could only take 25 players because there was one that we shouldn't have brought. Like, now that we're a world soccer power.
Right.
Does that make you feel better?
No.
That all of a sudden now we're having these kinds of dramas. It's like, well, we finally arrived. Now we have drama.
I guess you're right. I guess that puts us in more squarely the actual. Yeah. Now U.S. is really a soccer country, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, man, anyone who thinks Greg Berhalter's the right guy to go forward, I get it, man. There are a lot of Crew fans that have affinity for him because he's a great dude. He's a super nice guy.
You also have an affinity for him as a Crew fan.
I do as a Crew fan, and I really wanted to see him do well in this role. I think he is much better suited to be a club coach, to be where everyone buys in. You have multiple years with these guys.
No doubt.
They learn your system. I don't think he does well when you've got just a bunch of star talent and everyone is going to be expecting to play. I don't think his level is to go coach Manchester United or Manchester City or Arsenal or
Chelsea,
like these places where they're going to get a lot of top talent. I see him coaching more at a place where it's like there are a couple established stars and everybody else is kind of like, you know, the Tim Reams of this team.
Like,
you know,
Burnley.
Yeah, like I could see him being that level. Not that he can't coach in the Premier League. He could. I'm sure he'd do great. But I think he's a guy who fits much better having a couple years with players to get his system and figure out what to do. And that is just where I think he is really at his best level. I do not think he should be the manager going forward for the U.S. national team. I cannot believe he was naive enough to think I can throw all this out there 2 days after the World Cup ends for the U.S. and it wouldn't get reported on. And of course, now you've broken the trust, not just with Gio Reyna, but with everybody else in that locker room. I mean, all these other guys, at the very least, even if they think Greg is 100% right, these players are saying, man, all that happened in the locker room, and it was in The Athletic a week later.
By the way, you know what else was in The Athletic a week later?
What was that?
The Athletic reporting that U.S. soccer would like to identify Pep Guardiola to become the next head coach. I would also like that, but what are we talking about? What are we doing?
That's
if you think that Greg's system is intricate, you should watch a video on Pep's tactics.
Right, no kidding. That's not the guy you want. I don't think that's the guy you want coming in. This is what I'm talking about. Like, you get 3 weeks with these guys, and then they're gone for 2 months or 4 months or 6 months. And then they come back, and you get a week with them or a month with them or whatever. And then they have to go out and win a tournament. And then you're there with them for a few weeks, and then they're gone again. Like, I don't think that's the type of system. I don't think you need a manager like that. I think you need a manager who could say, who's healthy? Here's one of my 19 different ways I can deploy it. And all these guys will be able to figure this out because it's not very difficult. And we want these guys to play their tactics the way that makes sense for us. I just don't think Greg's that guy. And then seeing how he screwed this up is a whole nother mess that just tells me I'm right, that he should not be the head coach going forward.
other reported names on this list, which I just, you tell me, Zinedine Zidane. Yep.
Oh, sure. Sign me up.
Roberto Martinez, who flamed out as Belgium's coach.
All right. Well, maybe you can do it here.
I'm out on that.
Yeah. Okay.
Luis Enrique, who of course just got fired by Spain.
Right.
Marcelo Bielsa. And that was it. So.
Okay. Great.
Those are some pretty big names.
Yeah. I will say this. Those are all names too that, I mean, don't have any ties really, most of them, if not all of them, to U.S. soccer.
Correct.
And that's okay.
None.
I mean, yeah. I don't necessarily need that. I don't think the U.S. has to be one of these teams that says we only hire guys who used to play here, right, or who've coached in the system. I mean, if you were going to go that route, like there's the Josh Wolf route of a guy who I think could clearly come through the ranks. Steve Cherundolo is LAFC's head coach. And there's talk of maybe him at some point taking this on again. I don't know if that would work any better than the Greg situation. What I do know
is Michael Bradley.
No. God, no. All I know is whoever comes in has to be able to manage talent better and has to be able to get buy-in from players. And if you're saying, well, it's just one guy, it's Gio Reyna who didn't like it. Really? What happened to John Brooks? Right? That guy was gone. Weston McKennie had a big fallout with Greg, right, and then they had to amend that and fix that. And Weston McKennie had to grow up too. I mean, he made mistakes. The idea that this is just the only time Greg has ever had a player on the outs, it's not true. We don't even know what Ricardo Pepi's thinking here, right?
Oh,
like,
sure.
I'm saying, like, this idea, and I know that that's not the same thing as just saying, hey, I don't think you're good enough to play. I mean, guys are always going to be mad about that. But if you're not giving clear and distinct reasons of how they get into the fold, you know, Ricardo Pepi went over to Germany, tried to do everything he could to be in the fold, and was basically told, sorry. I know you helped us beat Mexico and qualify and do all these great things. It doesn't matter.
Zach Steffen.
Yeah. What do I have to do to be on the team?
What did Jordan Morris do to get on the team?
Dude, he's a vibes guy, man. He just keeps the locker room so pure and so clean and so fresh, and everybody loves him. And I mean, he's terrible on the field. I mean, that shouldn't matter at all, I guess. I'm fine with having a mascot guy, like a vibes guy as your 26th guy. I don't think the fact that you're truly and honestly considering sending Gio Reyna away makes me trust your judgment on who that mascot vibes guy is. And I just...
Maybe we can just sign Crew Cat for our new manager.
Right. Never mind. Again, like, we can go tactically into... Never mind the fact that Greg had the ability to probably put Tim Weah centrally and have Gio Reyna or Brendan Aaronson be on the wing next to him, and he elected not to do that. Instead, play
or
a system...
Or have them both on the field at the same time and Pulisic up top.
I'm saying between...
Just throwing ideas
between
off of
Weah, Pulisic, Reyna, and Aaronson, you had four guys up top there that easily could have solved your we-don't-have-a-striker problem. Then don't play a striker. Play a false nine and run with it. Instead, he insisted on putting, like, guys who were vastly inferior in to the rest of that lineup and then sitting guys who are clearly better because, well, they don't fit what I want to do. Well, then what you want to do needs to change. And I know people look at it and say, look at how well they did. Do you think they shouldn't have tied Wales? I don't. They were more talented. They were better than Wales. Do you think it should have been a one-goal win against Iran? I don't. I think that should have been a bigger victory. Could they have beaten England? Yes, they could have. Now they didn't, obviously, but they played them tough. I give them credit for that, but I think they could have qualified easier if the system was better, if Greg was better tactically. Never mind the fact that then when you played the Netherlands, an actual team, England is an actual team. I don't mean to say it that way. But, like, you got completely outcoached in a knockout game.
Yeah.
Completely run. So I just don't think he's at the level. So that's just for me. All right, I've ranted enough about that, Beamer. Any other thoughts you want to add as we wrap this up for this podcast and for the rest of the year?
Yeah, horribly sad, man. I know that, you know, we tweeted this out and we were texting when this happened, but Grant Wall passing away, it was just horrible.
It was so bad.
And I know over the years that we've had fun with, you know, some of Grant's articles and everything that he's written, man, but I saw that you tweet out, he was a man who loved soccer and equals in others in equal measure, and I just thought that that was so great, you know, for you to say that, because it's so true, man. He fought for others, and he fought for soccer and popularity here in the States, and that's just, it's a giant. And I mean, when you and I were texting with Evil Bald Colin, I had no words. I had no words to describe what I was feeling, and it came out that he had something to do with his aortic ventricle or something.
Yeah, they said an aortic aneurysm where it just burst. And they said there was no amount of, like, chest compressions or defibrillator or anything that would have, nothing could have stopped. Like, that's just a catastrophic, that happens, not much you can do about it. And it's horrible. Horrible that it happened on such a big stage. And yeah, it's really sad to see. But yeah, if you need evidence of what Grant Wall meant to soccer, just go on Twitter and search Grant Wall.
Right.
And then, like, look for people who cover soccer and look at what they've written about him. That's the biggest testament I think you can find. And clearly for Crew fans, you know, Grant Wall was the guy who broke the news that Precourt was even thinking of selling the team. So he broke that news. There were local reporters here that had it too. And from what I understand, you know, helped Grant get that story. But the end of the day, the point is he put that out there and that got everyone starting to freak out and go, what are we going to do? And then he didn't shy away from covering the story. He didn't instantly write off Crew fans who said, we think we can save this team. He covered the angles the way he's supposed to. And the last thing I guess I'll add to that is the amount of people who I've seen who said, when I started covering the Philadelphia Union, he immediately followed me and shot me a message and said, hey, congratulations on the job. Looking forward to following you. Like, how many teams did he do that for? All the Crew reporters said he did that for them. You know, like, he treated a lot of people like they were friends. And I know he was someone who also took it seriously to be able to, you know, speak to everyone in this country about soccer. He was very fluent in Spanish. Would give Spanish language interviews about USA Mexico games.
Yeah.
Would appear on, you know, the coverage there on the Spanish language networks. Like, the guy just truly and honestly, I feel like, really loved reporting on soccer and really cared about this sport. And if anything, I think it's a nice thing to see that it's not wrong to follow your passions, you know? Because he was on the path to be a big basketball reporter. He wrote the big cover story on LeBron James Sports Illustrated.
Yeah. Right.
Back in the day,
the chosen one.
Yeah, that cover, that was his cover story, but he wanted to cover soccer. And so people thought he was crazy, you know, and he said, no, I believe in this. And it turned out that he became the preeminent voice to me in soccer coverage in the U.S. So,
no doubt.
Sad to see him go. We will miss him greatly. And I don't think we'll truly understand the impact until we go throughout the next couple of years and you don't see Grant Wall tweets popping up about aspects of soccer. You don't see him posting things. Truly sad and truly stunning, but our thoughts are with his family as well. And and I guess that's a kind of a bad way to transition it, but I will also say we are thinking of them during this holiday time because I know that's going to be tough for them. And I also want to say we're thinking of all of you during this holiday time, and we thank you for being a part of this, and we hope you have a good couple weeks with family and otherwise. Whatever you're doing, stay safe. Look forward to talking to you again in 2023. But yeah, it's been a fun year for us, Beam, and I've enjoyed working with you on this. It's been a fun project. So
we've done this for 4 years. This podcast, hopefully year five coming after the new year. I've enjoyed the hell out of this year. It's been awesome. Again, to everybody who has listened, whether you've listened to 30 seconds of one episode or if you've listened, first of all, God help you if you've listened to every minute of every episode. You need some serious mental help. To every listener out there, everybody that's interacted with us, whether it be Crew fans or U.S. Men's National Team fans or United fans or Liverpool fans or like T-Bone, if you're somehow magically a Sunderland fan and a Leeds fan and a Fulham fan and you've gone through all that, just a huge thank you. I know for Musbone, you share the same sentiment. So excited to do it. Excited to get a couple weeks off. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And then, we'll be right back to it because we have a pretty damn condensed soccer schedule from the beginning of 2023 to the end of the season. Of course, the Crew season getting under. Like, there's just it's nonstop. It's nonstop, man.
It's amazing to think they're going to play the World Cup final on, what is that, December 18th?
Yep.
And then they're going to play Boxing Day matches on the 26th in the Premier League, and everyone's going to be, most everyone's going to be right back into it, and off we go into 2023. Enjoy your holiday season. Enjoy the new year, and we will talk to you then. Until next time, we'll see you at Zaftig, so come out and spot us there. We'll be out hanging out for sure, and hope you guys all have a great year and enjoy the soccer. Take care.